All the lived experience.
For being here, I thank all the panelists who are up here. So EMUs has been, this is like the third year that it's been around, and it's slowly growing, and I'm glad that we're able to have panel discussions like this, because these are important issues that affect all of us, and also affect the way the music industry is moving and growing and changing. So we're partnering with Warriors Against Violence Society and Vancouver New Music Society. And so, you know, we're putting on free workshops. There's a free concert tomorrow night, so if you're around at Vancouver Community College Broadway campus, we have Raven Chacon coming up from the States, Elliot Britton coming from Toronto, and, you know, we have four new commissions, so it'll be really exciting to hear all this new music created by Aboriginal composers. I have to thank our funders, Leon and Thea Turner Foundation. They help fund this event.
Yeah, there we go.
Get some stuff. I feel like my voice keeps cutting out, so it's like being on a cell phone, I guess. So as I change the battery, I'm just kind of going to introduce everyone up here. Multitasking, who knew? We have, and these will be shorter.
Performance art.
This is performance art.
Yeah.
I'm not staring at anybody. I feel like I should make eye contact with somebody.
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Now? I'm going to do short introductions because I think I talked a lot yesterday and I don't want to do that. So going from stage right to stage left, we have Jerry Webster, JB the First Lady, who's done a lot of recordings as a rapper and is part of a group called Enter Tribal, and they have a song on this CD. Do you want to pick? There we go again. If you want to pick one up later, we have a couple up here. It's also that their song is called Sisters, and it's featured on The Current, which is a CBC show. I'm sure she'll talk more about that. And next to her is Lorelei Williams, who is the founder and creator of Butterflies and Spirit, which is an organization based here in Vancouver. Next to Lorelei is Tiffany Moses, who is a producer, singer, songwriter, audio engineer. She's on the CD as well. Who knew? Copies now. And next to Tiffany is Alita Kitty Starr. And she's done a lot of work in music. Def Jam, has anybody heard of Def Jam? Def Jam, she was signed to that label.
Just a couple times.
Public Enemy. she's done a lot of work in music and videos. And over here next to me is Rube Sidhu, who's an all-around swell guy. And he's a rapper, he's an educator.
That sounds good.
Okay, that sounds good. All right. That keeps my yakking to a minimum. I'd like to start off with Lorelei and talking about murdered and missing Aboriginal women in Vancouver and in Canada. And I actually, you know, even through the States, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening down there. But yeah, like looking at what's happening in the community, and from, you know, from this perspective, like, what is, you know, all these images on TV, all the hip-hop songs or pop songs or, you know, everything that kind of is on the radio, mainstream radio, that kind of, you know, degrades women in some way or, you know, misogynistic. And so, but yeah, I'll pass it to Laura.
Thank you. Hello. Can you hear me? Okay. Hello everybody, my name is Lorelai Williams and I am from Skati Nation on my mom's side and Chehalis on my dad's side. I started a dance group called Butterflies in Spirit. I started this dance group to get my missing aunt's picture out there. That's where this idea first came about. I wanted to get my aunt's picture out there, my missing auntie, Belinda Williams. But I also wanted to honor and remember my cousin, Tanya Hollis, who was murdered by serial killer Robert Pinkton. So my cousin went missing in 1996, and then she was found on his farm. But to remember and honor her, for some reason I thought of dance. And I started this group 5 years ago, and it was supposed to be a one-time thing. And I got a few girls together, but what I had realized was other family members of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls would want to represent their loved ones. So we became a dance group of missing, family members of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And at that time, the song that popped out at me was Beyonce's song, Who Run the World Girls. It was an empowering song to me for women at the moment. And we did our dance. We blocked off the busy streets of Granville, Georgia during the Missing and Murdered Women's Inquiry. And we did our performance. And we're still here 5 years later. It was supposed to be a one-time thing, but we're still here. We didn't even consider ourselves dancers at the time. We were all beginner dancers. We had no idea what we were doing. We found a choreographer, and we did our performance. So that's how we started. But more recently, well, I guess I'll talk about that performance. It wasn't just a hip-hop dance. We actually sent a message. So in our performance, we incorporated cultural symbols such as the medicine wheel. And one of the most significant moves that we did was near the, at the end of the performance, the ones who represented their murdered loved ones laid down on the ground and they got covered by a sheet. And the ones who represented their missing loved ones stayed up so you can actually see their pictures, because we wore their pictures on our t-shirts. And so when we did that, you know, what you could see was a bunch of what looked like dead bodies in the middle of a busy intersection. And yeah, so we sent a message that way. And then ever since, we've done a few different dances, and the most recent dance is actually to JB, intertribal song, Sisters, which is a song about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and I'll let her explain that song later. But when we got asked to do, to work on the music video with them, we, our choreographer Madeline McCallum created this other performance. So we, in that performance, we danced contemporary hip-hop and traditional. I actually have to learn my own traditional dance, which I didn't know before because it was taken away from me
because my mom went to residential school, so my culture was taken from me. So through performance, through Butterflies and Spirit, I'm actually learning my own traditional dances. And same with the other butterflies. They're in the same boat as me. And so I guess I'll stop there for now and let the others speak, because I feel like I'm talking a lot.
Couple of questions came up.
Okay.
So in one aspect, so the representation of women in music, you know, through music video and such, is one aspect. But another aspect is how women are treated within the industry. Maybe somebody can talk to that. Alida?
Hi there. Sounds like your dance group is extremely successful, and I commend you for taking that first step and bringing such a good light onto such a dark subject. So I haven't lived in Vancouver full time for about 15 years now, except for here and there, so I'm really happy for you and happy for everyone you're reaching with your project.
Thank you.
I've been in the music industry professionally since 1996. My business is primarily rap music, but I also write songs with guitar and stuff like that. And every studio you go to is guys. Every record label you go to is guys. Every gig you go to is run by guys. Every meeting you take is guys. It's almost always white guys. And it's pretty overwhelming as a woman. That doesn't even start to talk about how we are portrayed. But that's just an actual physical experience of trying to run a business inside the industry. So I'm very interested. I feel like my job as an artist is to make people feel beautiful. And that's always been my job, so that I take my job seriously. And I've been studying and trying to write about this stuff for my 20 years so far. I don't know anything yet, actually. I feel like I've just started to understand it. I don't really know how to speak to you all, because I don't know what your interests are in the subject matter, but I have a movie that I made about the gender gap in the industry. It took me 4 years to make it, and it's coming out in Vancouver through Reel to Reel Film Festival in April. And so it's a deeper analysis of this, and we interviewed a lot of different people about their feeling, both women and men, about how they see the music industry. Because if our job as artists is to empower other people while empowering ourselves, then it's the job of men to empower us in equal proportion to what we empower them and each other. So we interviewed a lot of men about this, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you for bringing me here. I'm happy to be speaking here with all of you. And I'll pass it on to Tiffany or to Russell, whichever is best now.
Yes, sorry. I don't know really what to do.
Thank you. So one aspect is the artist, a woman as an artist in the industry. How about a technician, like a female technician in the industry? How are you treated?
I'll say, my experience, when I studied audio engineering, I was one of three girls in a class of over 30, and of our year, there was almost 100 students, and I think in that, there was less than 10 of us that were in that whole year. So when I'm going, when I'm in the studio, it's generally maybe that session I'd be the only woman in the session. And I found that there was more female artists that were brought in to be recorded behind, but not necessarily, not as technicians, as the artist. to be recorded, not running the session. So, I don't know, it's interesting because I didn't, at the time, you just accept, well, you accept your reality the way it is. So it's like, oh, okay, this is how it is. But I didn't think about it until afterwards about how skewed that was. And I feel like I've always been treated quite respectfully. I mean, I felt like I had an advantage because I went to music school first. So in my class, I had already been introduced to Pro Tools. So for the first semester when we were in the studio, I was one of the only students that had an experience in Pro Tools, so I actually got to run the sessions, be at the computer. That was just a fluke of the education that I had before. And the fact the way they had set it up was that we didn't get Pro Tools until the second semester, but we were already in the studio from the first semester. And then when I went on, like when I graduated from school, and then I'm one of our dear instructors, he set up a volunteer gig for some of the students that were a little bit more keen. And I was the only live, I was the only female live engineer for any of those gigs. And I am an introvert and I feel, I mean, confidence has been an issue for me. So sometimes I felt that, I don't know, this is probably just a projection of myself where I didn't feel that people were as confident in my skills, but that might have just been because I didn't feel confident in them. Or and recently I just saw this article, it was an interview with this woman, and she was talking about how a lot of women aren't promoted by their managers because their managers don't think they're confident enough. And nothing to do with the fact that their skills, like they can be plenty skilled, but they don't project confidence. So she was giving tips on how to show confidence. Like it could have been that those women were very confident in those their skills, but they weren't being perceived as confident. Therefore, they weren't given opportunities. Yeah. So interesting things to think about. I'll give this back to you.
I'd just like to add to that too, that a confident woman is also considered some women, when we've done studies, like psychological studies on how people likability with women, and confident women are considered less likable. Like when you do cross studies, a confident woman is, ooh, you know, stay away from her, she's confident. And that really affects how women, how we give ourselves, because if we show we're confident, we're gonna get hit from the other side or from behind if we show confidence. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
And then just really quickly, I'll just add that the way that confidence is perceived is in a very patriarchy-centered view of what confidence is.
Yeah.
Like stillness is not considered a source of confidence, but being out with your chest barreled out and being a loud voice in the room is.
Yes.
So I'll just add that, but I'll pass this back.
I feel like Phil Donahue.
You are.
You are.
You are. You are.
I got the hair for it. Okay. being a woman in the industry, having your own company, being an independent artist, you must encounter a lot of different situations, whether it's live or whether it's in a recording studio, whether you're writing something new. I know that, I know a lot of artists up here are already addressing that through their music, and I know with Sisters, with Intertribal, it's addressing an issue, but it's also taking out to the community. So JB, like, how is it for you as an independent artist, you know, working within that and, you know, raising your own funds to do all of this stuff?
Check. Never give a native a microphone. Just kidding. Because we like to talk. but also, first I want to acknowledge Coast Salish Territory for taking care of this beautiful land, for us to occupy it and learn from it. And us as Indigenous people, when we acknowledge the territory that we're on, it's just saying, like, we know who the caretaker cultures and who the owners are of this land. And we have a lot to learn from our Indigenous people. So I want to say that, and I also
want to acknowledge, I just want to acknowledge the work of my sister here, and that her story and how she's proactively bringing awareness, like Alita, also acknowledge Lorelei, is so important, and I just like raise my hands to you and your strength and your beauty and your resilience, but like also your empowerment you bring to our community is so powerful, and I just like raise my hands to you. So
thank you.
I just wanted to do that. It's not working for me. I don't understand. So for me as a young person, like I've always been like the only like woman like in different spaces, like basketball as a teenager, I was the only girl all the time and had to bring that confidence forward, and it's really helped me in bringing as a young Indigenous woman that empowerment that I got from basketball into music. And when I'm in like different ciphers, I actually like transform the room because of my female energy, and like almost not like commanding, but like also just saying like we have like I want men to be better. And when I am in a cipher or a freestyle, I'm like, we need to delete the words bitches and hoes, and because I want you to be better, I want you to talk about something that's more creative, because when you go to words like that, that's easy to go to. When it's easy to go to violence, it's easy to go to swearing. So I want you to improve yourself, and I want to improve myself. And when I surround myself with that energy, it just like recycles, and then everyone is better, you know what I mean? So it's been really cool journey, like when I do step into those rooms, and I've just like looked up to a lot of like when I was a younger person, I had a lot of role models as MCs, you know. Salt and Peppa was my first tape, you know. TLC, Missy Elliott, Debrat, like the list goes on. And then seeing Indigenous women, the first Indigenous women I saw on stage that were all about hip hop was Alita and Skeena Reese and Equal. And I had those Indigenous like role models, and I'm very happy that I could do that. And like because when I stepped into my first hip-hop show, it was at the Friendship Center, and I talk a lot about this in my media that like interviews that want to learn about who I am as an artist and where it came from, and it came directly from Alita and Oz 12 and Skeena Reese, Manic Wonderful, because at the time I was a young person that didn't feel like I had an Indigenous identity, and they brought that to me, and it was so successful in my life. It transformed my life, just like how hip hop dance brought Lorelei and the Butterflies to their own culture. Mm-hmm. And now I practice my own culture. Like after I was like, wow, these four elements of hip hop are so powerful. And looking across the board, how Indigenous people all around the world, why they connect to hip hop so much is because of those elements are in each of our Indigenous cultures. So it was because I lived in city centers, I was able to grasp into hip hop. And then that was the direct conduit into practicing my own culture. So now today, like, I have my own regalia. I made my own regalia. I cedar weave. I bead. And it was because of these elements that showed me that I am a creative person. So I can apply that to my own traditional self of creativity. So it's been such a cool, amazing journey for myself, and to be able to, like, for the song Sisters, I didn't just like want to make a song about missing and murdered Indigenous women, because in the last couple years, like
2 to 3 years, it's become this hashtag, mm-hmm. and it's become this thing to talk about. And for me, I wanted it to be empowering. I wanted it to bring awareness, and I wanted it to be humanizing, because I feel like sometimes in the media it really dehumanizes missing and murdered Indigenous women, saying like they're sex trade workers, they're addicts, they live on the downtown east side, or you know, they're responsible for their own death. And that made me so angry as a young person, as a young woman, saying like, no, not all of us are like that. And if you actually knew why people are in those unhealthy behaviors, is because of colonization and residential school. So for me, the subject of sisters, like I've waited 10 years for the song, because I wanted it to be like super, like I wanted to just honor the story, take care of the story. I just didn't want it to be like I'm capitalizing on this one issue, and I'm, you know, I really wanted to take care of it. And it was such a powerful experience, because I went to Lorelai's first performance and I said, yeah, I want to like make a song and collaborate with her. But it wasn't until like 3 or 4 years later till this song actually arrived to myself and Sino General. So when we made the song, it was like a spiritual experience. We actually felt like energies come in the room and actually even like brush against us, like on our feet, like on our leg. And Sino felt it like on his heart. And we wrote and recorded it in 1 hour. And our studio was right at Pender and Abbott. So we could really feel that energy in a real close energy, because we know a lot of our sisters have passed away in those alleys. And so from now, I don't really, some people have asked me, have you done spoken word about it? Do you have another song about it? I'm like, no, because I waited so long to make sure that I was taking care of that story in the best possible way. So sorry, I didn't want to talk too long on my relations.
The on and off trick.
On and off. Oh, there we go. Oh. Hello. Okay, so thank you. The only man on the panel here.
We only allow one.
It's next to some flip representation somewhere.
I know you've done a lot of work in a lot of music, different music communities. And I know yesterday our panel discussion was about two-spirited people in music, and knowing that like look, techno and hip-hop were both music that were born out of resistance, and somehow they kind of morph into something that's totally different, and like the more mainstream stuff is really, you know, whether it's techno or hip-hop, the images of women are really kind of skewed or different from what it originated as. So as an artist, I know you do a lot of positive messages through your rap, and how else can we, you know, change the industry, I guess?
Right.
No pressure.
Hi everybody, my name is Rupinder Singh Sidhu. Most everybody knows me as Rup. I am grateful to be here with you all today. First, I just want to diffuse a couple of things. Sexism, patriarchy has existed for a long time, and I feel like mainstream levels of music are endemic of that patriarchy spreading its nasty tendrils through all of society. So as much as the mainstream hip-hop and where it's gone and images that we see, I really want to see the roots of that being placed properly, not in the hip-hop community, but in a patriarchy that exists and has existed for a long time before that. And likewise with techno, our hip hop, and at the same time, both of those styles of music are in other places, not when we're attaching it to capitalism and patriarchy and putting it into those systems. It is creating beautiful levels of resistance and space for young marginalized women's voices as well. Now, when we talk about the mainstream of the music industry, this is an interesting thing because I've avoided it my whole life because of these things. I'm not a staunch capitalist, although I have to live in a capitalist society. I can't even remember the last time I pressed a CD to sell to anybody. And no judgment on anybody who does that, of course, but it's always been an industry that has made me feel like pushing it away and creating music on a community level, and being like the majority of work that I do in music right now. I work up the road here at the Sarah McLachlan School of Music, which is a free music school for inner city youth. And when I find myself touring, mostly these days, I'm touring in schools and touring various different communities throughout the country. So as far as like what we need to change the music industry, I mean, I don't think the music industry is changing until industry itself changes. Mm-hmm. And we step away from the paradigms of capitalism and patriarchy and we start to recognize what the healthy benefits for us in moving forward into the future really are in really, really starting to pick apart how capitalism has that trickle-down effect and how it is weaved in with patriarchy, and whatever it's going to end up touching, whatever art form it's going to end up touching, is going to end up falling into those tendrils, because those tendrils run long and they run deep. So I have no solutions aside from looking at what the actual roots of this are. And to me, those are a lot of the roots, and where those exist are in that kind of hetero capitalist patriarchy paradigm that exists that seems to feed all this ugliness into our society.
I'll pause there. Questions?
Yeah, sure.
So does anybody have any questions for our panelists about what was said today?
Do you think that the music is pushing back instead and creating space for people to develop ideas that will change society?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. You know, making music that isn't that is a great way of fighting back against that. Thanks. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Were there any key mentors that helped you along in your guys' journey?
Can you repeat that?
Were there any key mentors that helped you guys along in your journey?
Key mentors.
Don't slide that down. Anybody have somebody that comes to mind?
I've had lots of mentors in my lifetime, both informally and formally. My parents had a lot of really interesting friends growing up, and my father was a criminal defense lawyer, and so a lot of those people shaped me. You know, most people in our country that end up going to jail are women, you know, women who are working in the street, prostitutes, native people, bikers, poor people, immigrants. And so my dad's professional life was super integrated into our family life. A lot of those people lived with us, and their kids lived with us. And so I really felt like, I really feel like people who are on the short end of the stick, we have so much to learn from people who get treated unfairly because their natural strength is so rich. And I really, the older I get, the more influence I see from the people who were around me. that would be, by society standards, would be considered less important than someone who is wealthy and white and running things, you know? So I feel like our mentors are everywhere, and those are, I would qualify those, like my parents and their friends, and learning about the justice system to be like a very profound role for me in terms of mentorship.
I know for myself, when I first talked about my idea, it was my auntie Carrie. I just spoke about it, and she wouldn't let it go. Mm-hmm. She started talking to people about it, and then I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to do this. But along that journey, like when I started, there was a handful of people who have been working on this issue for over 25 years that came to me and helped me, or I went to them. But there's a lady named Lisa Yellowquill, Mona Woodward. They were the first ones that I went to, and they helped me. They blocked that street off George R. Granville for us to do our performance. And others came through, Bernie Williams, like so many people stepped up who were already working on this issue, and they came and they helped me with that. And it actually brought me to where I am today, because my whole background was in, I was on my way to get my bachelor's degree in tourism and business management. I knew I wanted to help people, and I thought it was tourists that I wanted to help, which I enjoyed, I love it still. But when I got into this, when I started Butterflies in Spirit, I got a job at Aboriginal Front Door, and that's right at Main and Hastings, working with women, and right then and there, I knew this is what I wanted to do. So right now, I actually work at the Vancouver Aboriginal Community Policing Center, where I work with families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. I work with women in violent situations. I work in the downtown east, with women in the downtown east side. And I try to build positive relationships between the communities and the police. You know, I know this is really hard considering what the police did to our people, our history with them, and even what, you know, all the things that they did to my family. And, you know, like with my missing aunt's case, my cousin Tanya's case, like so much damage has been done by them. But then I feel like something needs to change here. So I'm kind of like in between it, trying to make these changes so this doesn't happen to any more families, or so this doesn't happen to any other women, or so, you know, when I'm working with women in violent situations, I've been there, and I just want to help speed up that process, because it was a lot of work trying to figure out how to get out of an abusive relationship, or, you know, like, there's so much trauma in my family, you know, in my past, and just trying to figure out those ways. So, yeah, I have a lot of mentors, actually, but, yeah.
My cousin.
My cousin.
This microphone is me. Fine. I have a good big voice. Y'all can hear me, right? So my cousin, we're in the group together, Sino General. His hip hop name is Cheap Rock, and he's like really like, he's the first person that believed in me so much, that gave me that space and really wanted to empower women in music, because he saw that there was a lack of like Indigenous women in music and wanted to create that space. And he's like worked with like Niska Napoleon, Quana Style, and then the newest artist that we've been working with, her name's Miss Shells, and her whole album is about empowerment, talking about how it's like Indigenous women in hip hop, women era now, and really showcasing that with like different Indigenous women hip hop artists, not just like myself, but kind of like the newer generation of women, and really showcasing that on her album, and then talking about domestic violence and violence against women. And that's her story. Like, she came from a very hard life, and music was her number one thing that got her through. Like, she would be writing on her laptop and recording on her phone when her kids were asleep. And she saw Sino and myself on TV, on APTN, and said, wow, I want to know those people. I want to get to know them. And she finally met us, and we got to mentor her through her own album. And it just came out. It's on Spotify. So Ms. is M-Z, and then Shells with a Z at the end. And I really encourage you to go listen to it, because it's like, this story is a lot of like of our Indigenous women who are experiencing violence against them, but are strong and powerful and empowered. And she's getting that story through her album. And Chief Rock is like, you know, that's her partner, right? But he like recorded her album, bought her beats, like put on a CD release party for her, like made her physical CDs. Like, I'm like, how to impress your rapper girlfriend? Do all of that. So yeah, it's been a really cool journey, because like my cousin has been just seeing how it's very patriarchal, and I've been teaching him about like what is like misogynist, like what is misogyny, what is rape culture, what is like the patriarchal view. And he's really like talked with me and sat with me and listened, and then now has transformed it and actually put an action towards it. And it's been such a powerful thing to see, that to be from the beginning to the completion of it, and how we're doing that through music, and how we're empowering each other, and how that it's not just like, you know, especially in female hip hop, you know, there's like a rap beef with like Nicki Minaj and Remy Ma and stuff like that. And they're trying to say like, we're number one. Well, that's like a very colonial view, is like saying that you're number one, you're the queen, there's only one person. So for me, like being a female and being Indigenous, and you know, sometimes in our communities, we don't really uplift each other as women. And that's a reality. And that's because of the trauma. And that's, we're working through that. And for me, I've been working that on with myself and through in my community. And being supportive of another Indigenous female hip hop artist and showcasing that through, not only through the CD, but also like during her, her CD release party, and how us as Indigenous people, we welcome, like in a powwow, we welcome the dancer, a new dancer, and we have like a ceremony, how we do that. And that's what we kind of, we brought that to the table for this CD release party, is like, we're welcoming her into the hip hop circle. And we did that in like, and all the other artists, they were able to come and uplift her at that time. So that was really cool to bring our traditional teachings into, like, not just like, oh, it's a CD release party. No, we had the intention of having our cultural views and putting it into the night. So that was really cool. Yeah. To answer your question.
Do you want to answer that about mentors?
Oh, mentors. No, I was listening so completely that...
And it works.
Yeah. Well, one of my mentors is sitting beside me, actually. I met Alita, maybe 7 years ago. There was... VCC had a pilot music, Aboriginal music program that they offered for free. And it was kind of a condensed version of all the courses they were planning to have in the program. I don't know that actually came about, but through that I'd actually graduated from engineering school here in Vancouver, and like I said, I mean, I went to school with mainly dudes, so I and a lot of them, while we had in common the sound engineering, and while they're all like very lovely people, I didn't connect with them on a personal level, and I felt
I was at a stage where I was like, oh, I really want to meet some women and have some female friends, and I didn't know where to meet them because I'm pretty shy, and I'm not a person that is an extrovert or goes out very much. So anyways, I was looking through the Georgia Strait, and they had this, it was a free program, a VCC, so I signed up for it immediately. I was the first person to sign up for it. I called the registrar. They're like, nobody else has called about this. You're the first one. They weren't even sure how to register me. And I got in there, and I met Alita. I met Renai Morso. I met Sandy Schofield. A good friend, Hannah Clifford, a whole swath of women, basically. I met all these amazing women, and then all these incredible opportunities came out of that. I sang with Renai Morso's group for many years, McGirl. I've also sung with Sandy Schofield in her group, Escuelo Singers, and at one point I wrote a grant and asked Kinney to mentor me in songwriting, which is something that I do, but I always feel like, I mean, you can learn from everybody, and Alita was someone that, when I was in music school, actually my roommate had one of her CDs, and I used to listen to it, I don't know, there was probably about a month where I would wake up every morning and blast her CD. So, yeah, it was a really great opportunity for a different approach to songwriting, which I still use some of those techniques when I'm writing music now. Cool. Yeah. Other mentors, yeah, teachers that I've had, and I also went traveling when I was 21. After I'd gone to school for a bit and kind of spun my wheels because I wasn't in music and I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I decided I was going to travel. And I was meant to go with my best friend, but she didn't actually save up any money to buy the ticket or to go. So I decided, well, okay, if I don't go now, I don't know when I'm going to go. So I went by myself. And it was incredibly good for me because I was traveling alone, anytime I had a question, I had to speak to a stranger. I had to ask questions, and it got easier and easier to approach people I didn't know. And just realizing you don't have to know how you're going to do something. You just have to start. Mm-hmm. Right. And then all these things open up, like all these opportunities that you wouldn't have, you never would have imagined them. Mm-hmm. You just get started on the trail, and then all these other things open up. It's really incredible. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good.
It's amazing. Thanks, Steph. So many mentors in my life. We'll start at when I first remember. So my mom passed away when I was really young, and two of my aunts, your father's sisters are called Pua. So two of my Puas moved over from Punjab kind of without question. And so them without, like, from a very young age have been my mentors in seeing what duty means, what responsibility means, and what this idea of seva means, which is a kind of a, I think it goes back to Vedic philosophy, I know through Sikhism, but it's a philosophy based around service and being in service to peoples. And they instilled that in me at a young age, and a lot of my family did. But I'll just give my shout out to my aunties as well.
Yeah.
Cool. I know we're at the end of our time, so I want to thank all our panelists for being here today. There was a lot of information there, a lot of cool stuff, so raise my hands up to you. Thank you so much for being here. Can we give them a hand? I'm going to take this opportunity to spam a little bit.
Baloney.
Making sandwiches?
Yeah. So actually next door, Raven Chacon is going to be doing a workshop in hyper-directional music and sound. It's a free workshop, everybody's invited. We also have workshops tomorrow, Saturday, with Arduino and Max MSP and some other kind of really cool, interesting electronic-y stuff. And tomorrow night we have a concert, like I said, so please come out to the concert at VCC, the atrium, and it's free, it's open to everyone, and we have...
What time?
Oh, good, thank you. 8 p.m. is when we start, so...
Where? VCC?
Yeah, thank you for everyone for being here, and yeah, have a good day.
Mm-hmm. Give it up for Russell! Yeah. Yay!
True performance.
They're CDs.
Free CDs. You gotta mention that. They're free. Come get them.
Free CDs. What?
Made for the giveaway.
We're like, oh, you even have a CD player? No. Can we download it?
Oh my god.
Do you have a flash drive one?
me and my kids ate at a restaurant.
Yes. Yes.
And
yeah.
Was,
yeah. Cam, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like the one that you picked up at the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah.
Who was picking me up?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your son, he was like... GP
went like that. He was like right up in the corner.
What is it called?
Ghetto Blaster.
No, the restaurant.
I know. I was like, really? A tape?
At Broadway Station.
It's an abomination. We are in bombing nation. And that feeds the frustration that leads to vexation. Do you ignore it? Why, that is awful ignorant. And I admit that it's your fault. Do you shut the door on it? Read the inscription on the prescription. It's okay. What did she say? We are less than human anyways. Less than human anyways. Hey. We are semi-automatic. Thinking spectacle in the habit. And consequently plagued with panic. The encumbrance of the organic. This is the prologue to the eventual swan song. Yes, the preface has been prolonged, but you don't want to see the end. Read the inscription on the prescription. No more human deception. Scorches, but it's okay. What did she say? We are less than human anyways. Less than human anyways. Hey.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Yeah. years we sat.
Station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
This is CITR 101.9, broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam territory of the Musqueam people. We are doing a whole day of special broadcasting today. And you're tuned in right now to call your sister a very special International Women's Day episode hosted by me, Christine, and...
And me, Dora.
Yes. So... We're going to be talking about our sisters this episode.
Yeah.
Why are we doing that?
Great question. I think I interact with sisterhood a lot just because, like, I have so many sisters. And I was talking to my sister, like, just earlier for the show, and she was like, yeah, I think that, like, everyone, like, I consider, like, it's not just, like, a familial thing, like, all the women in my life, I would be like, oh, there are some aspects of, like, being sisters together. It's like, on International Women's Day, like, support your sisters. Like, do it.
Yeah, totally. I have one sister, and that person is my only sibling. And although we grew up in very different ways because she's 8 years older than me, and I think that is very, like, actually does change the way you see the world a little bit, I'm always just whenever I'm near her, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is me. Like, this is why I am the way I am. And so it's a topic that I'm so ready to delve into. Probably have been ready to delve into, like, all throughout my life, but especially now.
Like, how so?
Because it's been so hard, and I think this is true for a lot of sisters, but I don't want to speak for everyone, to draw the line somewhere and say, like, these are the things that make me me, and these are the things that maybe my sister has influenced.
Okay, okay.
And, yeah, and it's hard to separate the things that, like, should be in one camp or the other, and maybe like, oh, actually that's not a thing I do or like, and is not integral to me. So
that's actually, I think, a thing that pretty much anyone with a sibling would ever struggle with.
Yeah.
I always like feel, I don't like insert myself in, but I want to play the twin card. Like, that is, I have an older sister who I spoke to. She's 5 years older than me. I have a younger sister who's 7 years older than me, and I have an identical twin. And that, like, it's like, if you read any twin baby book, it's like, let them know that they are individual people. Like, this, like, idea of individuality is, like, so kind of ingrained. Like, my mom didn't dress up in the same colors. It would be like, these are Doris Claire's colors, and these are Clara's colors.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, what they do. I think it was, like, partially to, like, help her tell us apart. But then also it was, like, this, they're like, weird different separation, which was, like, especially weird because we looked exactly the same. And, like, I think also are exactly the same. Like, we are so similar. Every time I hang out with her, she lives in Toronto, and every time we, like, reconnect, it's, like, you're, like, the missing puzzle piece in my, like, jagged heart soul. Like, you, like, get everything. Kind of every perspective is just, like, so validated by her, mm-hmm, in, like, every single way, in, like, every single situation. But at this point, like, I don't really care. Like, I'm just, like, yeah. Because also we don't live together. And it's kind of, like, yeah, like, I'm doing me here, you're doing you there, and when we come together, we're this, like, weird, like, coalesced, like, super me, but that's, like, pretty, yeah, cool, too.
Do you ever feel like you're living in a situation where a parallel universe is going on at the same time? And, like, you get to, like, live out what your life would be like in Toronto as well as in Vancouver?
Oh, no.
That's creepy.
No, but I just think we're, like, we're similar enough. Claire is, like, a much quieter person than I am. When we're together, I think we are, like, equal levels of enthusiastic. But, like, in public, I'm way more like, yes, like, I will be big and I will be me. And she's kind of more like, get out of my way. Like, I just want to go to my thing. I think that she probably gets this, like, weird parallel universe thing more probably, like, time travel-y. Because she lives in the city where we both went to high school. So she runs into people who I was friends with, who she wasn't really friends with. Or, like, just, like, all these people
that were touched, like, by you.
Yeah.
But that she still has to,
like, interact with, and who, like, mistake her for me a lot. Like, I think that's, like, freakier. I kind of feel like I'm a whole new world. Like, in Vancouver, like, doesn't even count anymore.
Whoa.
I did have a question about, like, sisterhood and, like, yeah, being a little sister. Mm-hmm. I think I've, like, nailed the little sister role. I'm just like, yeah, like, you're my kind of, like, older, like, person who, like, has dictated. Like, I feel like a lot of my life was, like, a funnel that my older sister kind of, like, put a lot of, like, culture and stuff into, and then,
yeah,
like, parsed all out, and then I, like, took the good stuff, or that she, like, said was good. But I still have not determined, like, I don't know how to act as an older sister. Like, I feel so weird in that, like, role. But I feel like everyone wishes that they'd been an older or younger sibling. Are you, like, happy that you're your younger one?
I cannot imagine it any other way. Like, because my sister is so much older than I am. How much older is your sister?
5 years.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of time. We shared one teacher in high school. Like, the divide was so great that I feel like my sister often ended up, like, babysitting me and ended up, like, mothering me in a funny way. Like, even one time, I was going to come visit a friend in Vancouver when I was in high school, one of her friends. And she like told my parents that I should not do that because the friend would like let me do illicit activities and stuff. So like definitely the boundaries between like friend and like nurturing guiding force were very blended often in our relationship. I looked up a little bit of science before this episode, and to the point of why we're talking about sisters in particular, I think it's just like this experience that is really different than other experiences with siblings. Although, so this is a paper in 1997 that was published that says that individuals that exhibited pro-social behavior were more likely to have more siblings, but especially sisters. And that doesn't surprise me very much at all.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Because, like, your sisters will put you in line and, like, let you know when you're not, like, doing your part for the sisterhood.
But also, like, there's a lot of, like, kindness there, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, my feeling of pro-social is just, like, positive socializing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Like, I feel like they drew, like, a weird line of, like, you're acting weird, don't do that. Or, like, you're, like, behaving in a way that, like, I don't like, stop. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, demonstrated a lot of, like, oh, like, thanks, like, that's so cute. Like being, like, very kind and, like, helpful, like, as, like, a, like, mentor kind of, like, way, I guess.
Yeah, no, totally.
That's so interesting. I believe, I'm, like, so struck.
It's not causal, it's correlational, but it does not even shock me. I think it's awesome. The authors, I will say, thought that it might be because sisters adopt more of a mother role, which, like, I'm in the psychology department, so this is all my bread and butter, but it, like, helps you to form more secure relationships with your caregivers. So that's interesting. But what is it like for you to be a little sister with Mara, with your older sister?
I don't know. She and I aren't, like, super close. Mm-hmm. But it definitely was a lot of, like, I think it was a lot of me, like, seeking her approval and her kind of being like, yes. Like, she, like, when she, like, reached out and, like, gave it, I would be like, oh, my God, like, I've made it, like, I love Britney Spears now, and I think it's because, like, one time I was listening to a Britney Spears album, like, or watching, like, a music video or something. She came in, she was like, I love Britney Spears. And I was like, okay, like, cool. Like, Britney Spears is amazing. Yes. Like, I love everything she's ever done. And I do think she's amazing for, like, a lot of reasons, but
those influences are so stark. Like, I was convinced as a child that my sister and her friends were the Spice Girls and, like, could be replicated onto that archetype.
That's so cute. I feel like my older sister did a lot of, like, she had this, like, we had very different high school experiences, but I definitely was like, oh, like, that's, like, what you do. Like, the way that she, like, spent time with her friends and the way that she spent her time, like, personally. Like, I think I started a diary because I saw that she had one. And I was like, okay, I'm going to start journaling now. Like, cool. Just a lot of, like, I remember my grandma would always say, because I think she would get really annoyed by it. She'd be like, oh, my God, like, be your own person. Mm. But I remember my grandma always being like, imitation is the highest form of flattery. Like,
yeah,
Doris wants to be you. And I was like, I do. So bad.
This is interesting. This is something I was thinking about today. Do you ever feel like you were, like, ready or wanted to grow up faster because you had an older sister?
No, I never felt ready. I, like, still don't feel ready. No. I found her very intimidating a lot of times. So I was like, oh, I'm never going to reach that. Like, I'm like, very comfortable in the, like, I'm a little child. Like, I don't need to, like, mature at all. Like, she's kind of matured for me, kind of. I found it, like, very scary. And then, like, I mean, like, obviously I made it. Like,
I've come out on the other side.
Yeah. I'm an adult. But no, I never was, like, eager to be in her shoes. It seemed like too much responsibility.
Yes, it does. So what are we going to do after I play this song?
We're going to play an interview. I think it's like some of the dumbest radio ever. It's so stupid. I couldn't get the phone. She lives in New York. I interviewed Mara about like sisterhood and like International Women's Day and what she's doing and how she feels about all that. And I couldn't get the phone to work, so I had to like Facebook call her, but I couldn't, like, she couldn't hear me. So it's a lot of me like typing and like speaking really slowly as I'm typing. There's one part that I just sped up because it was just me like explaining what the purpose of the episode was to her about halfway through the episode or halfway through the interview, which was like not very good timing. But it's like, it was so dumb. It was like so dumb to record. And as like, there's a lot of moments where I'm like giggling to myself because I'm like, this is a joke. Like, you're living a literal prank.
But it's real live sister action on the radio.
Yeah, sister interaction. And I think it was really good. She gave like some really cute advice at the end. I'll let the listeners hear it. But it, yeah, it's just about like sistering, womaning. I don't know.
Amazing. And then later on in the show, we're going to play a story that one of the execs on CITR Student Executive wrote about their sister. And we will be talking throughout about sisterhood. So stay tuned in. I'm going to play the song, very appropriately, Little Sister by Sada Bonheur. No. So stay tuned.
How do you like your media?
Raw.
Spicy.
Free.
I like my media sunny side up.
Shape your media just the way you like it by supporting CITR. Every year, we ask listeners, readers, friends, and family to support CITR by donating to our annual fund drive. It keeps the station running, and it helps us take on new projects. This year, CITR is looking to help our community shape their media by fundraising to provide new training sessions in current affairs journalism, giving creators new skills to shake up the media landscape. Thursday, March 9th at 12 p.m. to March 16th, we're opening up our phone lines old school telethon style. Call in during your favorite programs to hear about the special prizes each show is offering. You can support CITR and shape your media by making a pledge. You can also make a pledge now online at www.citr.ca/fundrive. How do you like your media, John?
Spicy. Is that good?
Thank you.
Wait, hold on.
I think
Keegan also said spicy. Can I say something else?
Mm-hmm.
No, can you ask me a question again?
How do you like your media?
Well done. But that's not like what CITR is, more like a rare steak.
don't dance in my shoes. Do not imitate me. No, 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 no more. No, 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 no more. Oh, 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 little sister. Oh, Jimmy, help me. Oh, little sister. Don't copy my hairdo. Don't steal my makeup. Don't read my diary. Do not imitate me.
Hello and welcome back to this special hour, Call Your Sister, what part of CITR 101.9 FM's 17 hours of all women programmed, like FemCon content for International Women's Day. We're just going to play, oh, that was Little Sister. It was good. we're just going to play an interview that I did with my older sister. The whole theme of today's episode is sisterhood and everything. And this is an interview that I did with my older sister who lives in New York, kind of talking about what sisterhood means to her and what she's doing to celebrate women today. Disclaimer, it's so stupid because I couldn't speak to her. I was typing on Facebook the whole time. So it's kind of weird and disjointed and a little bit of talking over each other just because she can't hear that I'm talking. But besides that, like 99% of it's like very clear and concise and good. So enjoy that. And then we'll be right back with more tunes.
Hello? Oh man, okay. Sorry, that's weird. I feel like I've been clearing my throat a lot. I apologize.
And no, it's totally my fault.
Okay, cool.
This is okay. So stupid. But here's the question. Here's the first question.
Okay, hit me with a question.
How are you celebrating International Women's Day?
Okay, so my office closed. I work at the history department at NYU, and we are like a completely woman-run office, so like the staff. So we all didn't come in today. We put up signs around the office that we downloaded them from the Women's March website. And we sent the letter that they also posted on that website to our students. And my boss, the chair, is sending something to faculty, and we are not coming in. And so today, this morning, I went for a run with a friend of mine, and then we went together to a woman-owned restaurant, which is near my house in the East Village. And it was hard, actually, to find a woman-owned restaurant. We had to do a lot of Googling, and we, like, went to one place, and it was closed, and we're kind of walking all over. So that was kind of crazy to just have that experience. Like, we really, we women don't own a lot of businesses, at least in the Village. So I think if I'd gone to Brooklyn, there would have been more, which is rad. Anyway, I'm also going to the rally in Central Park at noon. I might be a little late. and I'm meeting a coworker there, and we're wearing red and just kind of, you know, trying to show up and also think about and talk about and celebrate women-owned businesses and women. Stop me if I'm rambling. You can definitely tell me to shut up.
No.
I also emailed you. This is funny. Yesterday, I emailed Dora my introduction to the Tech at NYU website, which is a student org I just joined, and we're meeting tonight, and so we're also, I emailed the president and said that I wanted to sort of open up a discussion about women in tech. I don't know how much, though, I haven't talked to you about this, but the woman who just, I think Susan Foster is her name, but I could be totally screwing that up, so... Oh, Susan Fowler, excuse me. Anyway, she just came forward. She was an engineer at Uber, and she experienced a lot of straight-up discrimination based on some negative experience she had with her supervisor, which is a very brief summary. But I thought it would be cool to open up at this meeting a discussion about women in tech, and a lot of the women that are in this organization at NYU, which is mostly undergrad, which is awesome, are already, like, really experiencing life in the tech industry. Like, at this point, like, it's really real, and I was hoping to be able to, like, start a discussion about their experiences and just the future of women in tech and women working everywhere, because working is rad.
Okay, I'm gonna ask the next question. Also, cool, cool. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Dude, of course. I feel I'm honored and also probably making a butt out of myself.
I feel that literally all the time. But so the point of this kind of special hour is...
Dude, of course.
So
excellent, excellent. A subject I am well versed in.
Dude, I know. So what does sisterhood mean to you?
Well, that's an important question. I think obviously, first and foremost, I have a lot of sisters. So as someone who identifies very strongly with my sisters and my mom, and we have, I don't know, Dora, how much you have talked about our family on air, but we have a big family and a lot of women, and I think sisterhood for me in a more broad, like, way is about sort of the bonds I have with the other women in my life, like, be it my coworkers, my friends, my sisters, like, every woman I know has, like, something important to say. No, but I'm on the radio. Anyway, yeah, I think that just means, like, showing up for the other women in your life and listening to them and working with them, like, in all areas, you know, personally. And I don't know, I think it's a very, sisterhood is sort of the primary thing in my life as a woman.
Awesome.
Jeez.
So how do... you kind of specifically practice sisterhood?
Can you expand on what you mean by practice a little bit, or, like,
yeah,
do you mean, like,
like, what are some, like, actions you take in your everyday life with your coworkers or your fam or your friends to promote togetherness, etc., etc.?
I feel like I'm talking a lot about work, but to, you know, I like work every day. I think that's something since I graduated undergrad, like, work becomes the place where I spend the most of my time most of the week, you know? So I think with my coworkers, like I said earlier, we're exclusively women. We're a women-run department, and we...
Was that intentional?
Have to, obviously, it comes up. Like, it's not something that doesn't come up. Like, our experiences at work, we always sort of debrief with each other and talk about, like, how we are feeling about things, what we want to do, you know, like, develop, how we want to improve, where we want to go after this job. You know, we talk about that a lot, and those experiences always involve, you know, we just share a bond. We share something fundamental. And so that's sort of the biggest way is, and I'd say with my family as well. Like, if I have the opportunity to talk to my mom, you know, mom, or you or Clara, like, about what, just anything, like, that's practicing sisterhood in my mind, you know?
Totally. Was the all-female office space intentional?
Actually, kind of. I don't think it was intentional, but, like, this was something I was actually talking to mom about yesterday. I think in higher education and in university culture, like, women tend to take on a lot of the administrative roles. That's, you know, there are some really cool, I want to use a swear word here to describe how awesome some of the female faculty members in our department are. At the same time, that's a different sort of realm almost. And the truth is, the engine of the university is women. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. So
yeah.
It wasn't necessarily intentional, but I think women are the bomb. Like, I've conducted some interviews for student workers, and I've obviously met some really cool, hardworking men, but I've also met a lot of really cool, hardworking women, and I just think, like, yeah, I kind of prefer working with women. Just gonna put that out there. Talking about practicing sisterhood, like, that is part of why I want to come into work, you know? Like, I show up because obviously I need to get paid, but, like, yeah, that support, exactly. Like, that support is pretty awesome.
Perfection.
But my boss is, so the chair of the history department, I'm the assistant to the chair, he's a man, and he was, like, so supportive of us, like, making this decision, closing the office. He's called himself one of the girls before, and he totally has earned that badge of honor. But so, yeah, like, I'm totally, like, I'm not saying, when I say, like, I prefer to work with women, it's not like I don't like working with men, you know? Like, that's absolutely not the case. It's just, this is, I don't know, like, for work especially, you know, any, like, extracurriculars that I do, like, I feel like sisterhood is definitely a driving factor in that.
Hell yeah.
Can I say that on the radio? Can I say that, what you just typed?
Yes.
Yeah, hell yeah. That felt good.
How do you think women can improve their practices of support and of sisterhood?
First question, how do you think women can improve their practices of support and of sisterhood? I think that's where it comes down to just being, like, you can always improve, you know? Like, I learn every day. Like, you know, Dora, better than I think most people on planet Earth, that everyone, me especially, had my moments where just like you learn from them. And so I think that should inform your practices of support and of sisterhood. And, you know, like that's just how you can always improve. Learn, listen to people. I think people can listen to each other more always. That's hard, especially like in New York, you know, like you're always just like me, like, and sometimes it's like, ooh, let me like sit down, step back and listen to my coworker and like, you know, pay attention to them. And that benefits everyone. And older sister radio friendly advice, I would say, you know, take yourself seriously always. That's, I think, as an older sister, like, you are doing really cool things. I think everyone, you know, college is a cool place, and the potential is, like, it feels absolutely endless. And so hold on to that when you graduate, and even now, like, you know, like, figure out what you want to do and know that you can do it. Own a business, dude. I want to own a business now. Like, yeah, women can do literally any awesome thing. So yeah, that's my advice.
Parfait. Thank
awesome. Thank you so much. I'm gonna have to listen back to this because I want to hear it. I want to hear you. We've had a conversation and I've only heard myself.
Thanks.
Yay. All right. Shower love good. You. Thank you guys.
Love you too.
Oh yeah, word. I really gotta do that.
Bye.
Bye.
Rejected by the losing, it is constant, but
You're tuned in to CITR 101.9. This is International Women's Day. We are having a very special day of broadcasting. The grid is full of FemCon.
Yes.
So you just heard the song Conceptual Romance by Jenny Haval off of her latest Blood Bee. That song is all about how intimate your relationships can be, even when they're not romantic. And we're talking today about our sisters.